All right. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Monday, February 16th, 2026. Present today are Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson, along with Co-Chair Foster. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. We are going to change the order of operations today, and I'm going to ask, unless they're cramming and need the next 30 minutes to do so, and I bet they're not, I'm going to ask the court systems officials to come forward and present their budget overview at this time. We have Rep. St. Clair in the gallery, and we've been joined by Representative Allard and Co-Chair Shragi. So we're going to start with the court system first. Representative Stapp.
Yeah. I think, Co-Chair, is there a reason why we're switching up the order today, the Chair?
Yes, the reason is that one of our members is presenting a bill, apparently.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Klein, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Noah Klein. I'm Associate Counsel for the Alaska Court System. On the line, I have Rhonda McLeod. She's the court system's CFO and available for any technical questions. And in the gallery, Nancy Mead is here as well. If for some reason I falter and can't answer something, she's available.
Okay.
So you all heard the Chief Justice last week talk about the court system in some level of detail, so I'm going to try to keep my remarks pretty high level and specific to our budget. So this slide just shows really the court system as a piece of the statewide pie. You can see that the vast majority of funding all funds is in the executive branch. That's all the agencies in the executive branch together to make up almost 90% of the court system, of the state budget. And then the university is almost 10%, and the judicial and legislative branches are obviously much smaller, but no less important than the other branches of government. Now, this slide just shows the two appropriations that go to the Alaska court system. We control two appropriations. One of them is the therapeutic courts, and the other is called the Alaska court system, which is further broken down into three allocations. And so first I'll speak for a second about the therapeutic courts, and just they're about 6% of our budget. We have courts in five locations currently. That's Anchorage, Palmer, Kenai, Juneau, and Fairbanks. And we have four types of therapeutic courts. So Anchorage, for example, has all four types, whereas other locations might only have one. So we have therapeutic courts for mental health, for substance abuse. We have China family courts, and then we have two veterans courts as well. Okay. Unless anyone has any questions about the therapeutic courts, I can just dive into what the Alaska court system appropriation is.
Sure. Let's go to slide four. Rep. Stapp appears to have a question for Mr. Klein.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Mr. Klein. Since you brought up the therapeutic courts, I'm just curious, regarding the Veterans Court, I've been told that in order to attend the Veterans Court, you actually have to be physically residing in the jurisdiction of a where a Veterans Court operates, i.e. Anchorage and Fairbanks. So if I was a veteran in Palmer, I couldn't drive to the court in Anchorage and attend because I'm in a different judicial jurisdiction. And I'm just curious if that's correct through the chair.
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Stapp, I'm not sure whether or not someone from Palmer would be allowed to participate, but I do know that in order to participate in therapeutic courts, you have to participate in treatment, you have to have housing, you have to have employment, and those are generally in the location of the court. So I'm just not sure if that individual in Palmer, for example, would be able to participate in those things in Anchorage. But to answer, to give you a specific answer, I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Okay, so we're on slide four.
Okay, this slide just really breaks down where the court system spends our money. So the vast majority of our costs are our people. Over time, this has slightly ticked up. Our personal services costs are getting higher as a percentage, not because we're expanding programs, just because raises and benefits are in the adjusted base budget, whereas we haven't really asked for or received much in terms of other operating costs. So we used to be lower 70% personnel, now we're 77% personnel. The other large driver of the court system budget, what we spend money on, are contractual costs. That's our subscription services for our libraries, for example, our software, and then predominantly that's our facilities. So we have lease costs, utility costs, snow plowing costs, et cetera. That's that $31 million, $32 million.
Okay. Please continue.
And this is the last of, I guess I would call it, the higher level slides. This just shows where we are in the state. I know I saw an agency here last week, maybe the week before, talking about their presence in 30 plus locations. The court system is in 39 locations in the state. We have facilities statewide. 15 of those with the darker dots on this map, are locations where we have a superior court judge. And then the other locations will have either a magistrate or a deputy magistrate available.
Slide 6.
Okay, this is getting, I guess, more to the budget meat. This is the request that the Supreme Court submitted last year. And when I say the Supreme Court, the Alaska Supreme Court determines the court system's budget requests, and they're the ones who ultimately ask for what we ask for. And you'll notice that there's an asterisk next to the first increment. I'll speak to that at the end, if the committee will allow. But basically, last year, we had a little over $1 million in general fund increment requests. The vast majority of that was in our maintenance and operation request. These are the costs to keep our facilities open. That's, our utilities, our snow plowing, our janitorial, as well as CPI built into our leases. The biggest chunk of that $534 last year was the Utqiagvik lease was expiring, and we knew we would have a high cost when renegotiating that lease. We also asked for $365,000 for the court visitor program. As a reminder, this program is part of the protected persons program in the state. So essentially, when someone is getting a guardian or a conservator, when there's a petition for that to happen, court visitors are investigators for the court. They go out and actually make sure that that person is an appropriate candidate for a protective arrangement. They also stay involved with those people when there are three-year reviews of protective arrangements.
Representative Hannon for Mr. Klein.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Mr. Klein, the Supreme Court Justice spoke about the Utqiagvik Court and a naming ceremony, so I'm a little surprised to hear that it's a lease facility. So explain that to me.
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. We do lease our facilities. Generally, we enter into long-term leases if possible, so they'll typically be 5 or 10 years with CPI increases built in for longer term. So that is a facility that we do not own. Our ownership structure is unique across the state, where we lease about a third of our facilities from private landowners or municipalities, for example. I believe the Utqiagvik lease is a private lease, not a municipal lease. Then the court system owns about a third of our facilities, and about a third are state-owned facilities where we are the primary tenant in that facility. So DOT, for example, owns some of our facilities.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, Mr. Klein, I'm curious about the portion of the funds, $170,800, that was not included in the governor's budget. It looks like that would be mostly the therapeutic courts. I'm guessing that was specific toward that. And I would like to know a bit of what the therapeutic court means. Like, it was this? Were they set up? I see that you have specific areas that would meet, I guess, the needs of Alaskans, whether they're veteran or have mental health issues or substance abuse or family court. So were they set up as such so that they could be more efficient for those groups of people, or was there some other reason? Is this considered an extra that's superfluous, or is it indeed efficient, I guess, is what I'd like to hear.
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, again, for the record, this is Noah Klein with the court system. I think that's a multi-part question, so I'll try to tackle the first question first. The $170,000 that wasn't included in the governor's budget, that was a piece of our maintenance and operations request. So that wasn't related to the therapeutic courts.
Okay.
But moving to your question about the therapeutic courts, basically the therapeutic court model is a model where people can electively participate, and the idea is to treat the underlying cause of the criminal or the harmful behavior. And so that is what therapeutic courts are set up to do. They generally have much lower, for example, recidivism rates amongst their graduates than other courts. So I don't think I'm the person to say whether they're useful or not. I think participants would definitely say that, and people involved in the therapeutic courts would espouse that they're positive.
Mm-hmm. If I may, just to follow up a comment, just that I would add that if we're seeing lower recidivism rates within that population, then I think it's certainly very important, and I appreciate hearing that. I just wanted to have that understanding. Thank you.
Mr. Klein, I just want to be especially sure here on slide 6. 2 Decembers ago, about 14 months ago, when the governor proposed his FY26 budget, all of the things shown on slide 6 were there on behalf of the judiciary, except for the $170,800?
To the chair, in the operating budget, all of the court system's requests were in the budget. It was actually 188. That was less instead of the 170.8. We used the 170.8 for ease of reference only because our request changed. So, but yes, our entire operating request was included in the governor's budget last year, except for a piece of that operating and maintenance request, the 170.8 or the 188.8.
So you said the word all so emphatically. It was not all of what the court system requested, right?
To the chair, correct. And the court system has strong feelings about that, of course. The court system's belief is that all of the court system or the judiciary's requests should go to the legislature in the original budget bill that's presented to the legislature. I only meant to clarify that, yes, you were correct when you said it was all of the increments except for that one, but it's the court system's position that both separation of powers and respect for a coordinate branch of government require that the court system's budget comes to the legislature unchanged.
All right. Now, since we're down this lane, the members have in their file folder a memo from former Chief Justice Joel Bulger, and he cites to a 1967 memorandum in his letter to the governor of 2019, and he says, Governor, in the preceding 52 years, it looks like at the time of his writing, the court system's requests had always been added to the governor's budget. Tell us why that's important to you.
To the chair, we think that's extremely important because it shows that while at some point very early on in statehood this question was asked whether or not the executive could change the court system's budget request, it was answered for the vast majority of statehood, where we have this historic practice of every single governor from the 1960s through 2019 including the court system's entire request in the budget.
Okay, so that was the first Governor Hickel. He became governor again in the 90s, but it dates back that far up until Governor Dunleavy, those requests were honored at least at stage one of the budget process. Is that your understanding?
To the chair, yes, that is my understanding. And what that means is that, like I assume the legislature would also expect, that as a coordinate branch of government, the court system's budget was considered at the same time as all other budget requests that the governor had submitted, so that the governor's budget included the full request of the Supreme Court. Of course, the legislature could then do what they do with the budget and make their determinations, and the governor also has the veto authority on the back end. But at least on the front end, the full budget picture included the court system's budget request.
Okay. Questions about this topic? Right. I don't see any. Let's go to slide 7.
So this slide just shows what out of that $1.1 million, what the court system actually received last year. So we received $250,000 for maintenance and operations. That's of that $534,000 we requested. We also received balance funding for two positions, two competency calendar positions that are primarily funded through the through mental health trust receipts. But we've been asking the legislature for years for the balance funding for those positions. And we also received RSA, or reimbursable service agreement funding, for positions in the therapeutic courts that are not actually employed by the court system. So we pay the executive branch for those positions. The cost of those people went up. They got raises like everyone else.
Okay, so in the final analysis in June last summer, what you didn't get was principally some of the M&O you asked for, maintenance and operations, and the funding for court visitors. Those were two main topics.
To the chair, yes, that's correct.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I just want to ask this question to make sure we have it on the record. And could you, if you, Mr. Klein, could explain to us what the court visitor services does, and by it not being funded, what that does to processing of cases that should have those.
Mr. Klein.
If the chair will allow, I'll forward to the next slide because it answers this.
Let's go to slide 8, I guess.
So through the chair to Representative Hannon. Yes, this shows the items, the increments that the court system didn't receive. The court visitor program, again, is part of protected persons proceedings, where when a judge is making a determination of whether protection is warranted or whether or not to continue with that protective arrangement, court visitors are investigators who report back to the judge. What the short funding or lack of funding for this request will do to our budget or do to us is that we had a backlog of 3-year reviews where court visitors are supposed to go out and review protective arrangements every 3 years. And we had already been whittling down the backlog, but taking our time to make sure that it was balanced. We weren't going to do all the 3-year reviews at one time, because then all the subsequent 3-year reviews would again appear at the same time, and we just wouldn't have the resources to do it that way. And so without this funding, one of the things that we are going to try to do in order to ensure that we can continue the program, because it is a statutorily mandated program, is to just smooth out those 3-year reviews a little longer, take some more time in when we conduct those reviews.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
Follow up, thank you. And again, so that we can have it on the record here, but from the Supreme Court Justice's address to us, I think many people are shocked to find out that the majority of cases and time of the court is not criminal adjudication. So I don't know if you have the statistics that she gave to us in her speech about how many cases would be or should be receiving court visitor services to be proceeding those guardianships and China cases, I assume is what you mean by those protected person cases. And that then means they're not being processed and addressed, is what I'm hearing you say.
If you know, Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. So I want to be clear. First of all, the courts typically less than 30% of their caseload are criminal cases. I don't have the exact percent, but it's definitely less than 30%. The total amount of cases with court visitors right now, I can bring that number. I don't know that number off the top of my head, but I can get that number back. And to be clear, the court is not, the courts are not doing this. It is a statutorily mandated thing, and so we will continue to do it, and we will try to find the savings in whatever way we can. But yes, smoothing out the 3-year reviews is one of those ways that we're going to look to save that $365,000 if we don't have the funding for the court visitors.
Okay. Anything else on slide 8 you want to add?
The only thing I'd like to add to the chair is that the maintenance and operations, the reason it shows up twice there for what we didn't receive is $113,000 the legislature chose not to provide, and $170,000 linked to that amount that wasn't in the governor's budget was vetoed by the governor. So the legislature tried to provide that $170,800, and it was vetoed out of our budget.
Okay. Let's go to slide 9.
This slide, it's hard to look at because it basically looks the same, but I just want to point out that the big change in this slide, you can see that the FY27 adjusted base is higher, and that's about a 2.5% increase in our personal service costs. So our adjusted base went up because, like all legislative employees and other employees in the state, July 1, our employees are going to get a raise, and then the cost of AlaskaCare went up, the cost of the PERS rate went up. So that's why that bar goes up. But you can also see the FY27 gov is basically identical to our FY27 adjusted base, and I'll get to that, why that is, in a second.
And just, I mean, I know this is, maybe it's not so obvious. When the court system wants to raise revenue, which is sort of odd and almost comical to think of in some ways, one of the things it does, I think with real hesitancy, and it's done through civil rule adjustments or administrative rules, if, for example, there's a fender bender in a lawsuit, there's a filing fee, it's either $250 or $500, somewhere in that range, but those dollars come to the Treasury, except for dollars that are then going to legal services in part to fund their program. Do I have that right?
To the chair, that's correct. None of our filing fees go directly to the court system. They all go to the general fund. They go to the Treasury. So we don't receive any additional, quote-unquote, revenue for our programs based on filing fees received or filing fee costs.
And I just ask the members to think about that because as a political matter, the court system is apolitical, so it can't really in its culture flex a muscle and say we demand X, Y, and Z. The legislature and executive branch are more comfortable by nature doing that. We can raise taxes. We don't do that, but we can raise taxes. The executive branch can have designated general funds through fees. The court system is fairly reliant on the other two branches. Am I missing something?
To the chair, that is exactly correct. We would describe ourselves as the branch that asks when it comes to budgeting. We just make our requests, and we try to present them as best we can to make the case for why we ask for what we ask for, and we also try to be extremely conservative in what we ask for. We only ask for things that we need. And I think, just moving slightly back to Representative Hannon's point, the way we can account for budget shortfalls is simply through generally personnel. We're almost entirely personnel, so keeping positions open, for example, which can have impacts on services, is generally what we would do, at least in the near future, for any budget shortfall.
Okay. Are we ready for slide 10? I bet we are. Slide 10.
So this is our UGF, or our increment requests this year. To be clear, these were requested by the Supreme Court, but none of these requests are in the FY27 governance budget, so we don't have any UGF or general fund increments in the budget right now. Again, we consider these very conservative. What we're asking for is $700,000 for maintenance and operation. A chunk of that is the funding we didn't receive last year, and that's broken down amongst our lease cost increases as well as agreements we have with Department of Transportation for their maintenance of some of our facilities and their operation of some facilities. The reason there is a negative $100,000 after that $700,000 is because when we first came up with our request and the court determined how much the court system needed, we had an estimate from DOT for our service level agreement costs. And DOT knew we'd be relying on that estimate, but we actually got the actual costs since we created our request. It's $100,000 less than our estimate was, and that's why we're actually only asking for $600,000 for operations and maintenance. Our only other operating budget request was, again, the balance funding for two positions, two competency calendaring positions. And to be clear on what these people are doing, these are predominantly mental health trust-funded positions. And they look at one looks at the Anchorage competency calendar, one looks at the statewide competency calendar to make sure that people are not languishing before they get their competency determinations. And so last year we asked for $92,000 for the balance funding for these positions. This year we're asking for $115,000 because, like most of our positions, the cost of these two positions increased.
All right, so this $115.5 is a match of some mental health monies?
It's less than a match to the chair, but yes, there's two positions that are funded $158,000 with mental health money.
Okay, okay. Seeing no questions, let's go to slide 11.
Slide 11 shows that $158,000, that is the mental health portion of those two positions, and the only program expansion we have this year is the $102,000 for a behavioral health administrator. This is a position recommended by the trust. The idea behind this position, and this is, again, trust-funded, this is not GF money, this position would help coordinate the court system's response to participants, people involved with the court system with behavioral health concerns. The goal would be to have a single program for all individuals with behavioral health concerns across all case types rather than dealing with it piecemeal case type to case type.
Okay. Capital requests.
Yeah, these are the court system's FY27 capital requests. This slide looks almost identical to a slide that I presented last year. The items are the same. The only difference is the amount for deferred maintenance is slightly higher. I'll speak to the Palmer Courthouse for a brief second before I move on to the other requests. As you may know, and as you heard the Chief Justice talk about, we do have a request for an additional judge in Palmer. There's a bill for that request, so you'll hear that. That is referred to this committee, and you'll hear my colleague, Biss Mead, talk about that request. And associated with that request, we are doing renovations to the courthouse currently in order to have a place for that judge.
And the renovation will be beneficial to the ultimate expansion? In other words, it fits.
To the chair, the renovation is consistent with the ultimate expansion.
Okay.
So the ultimate expansion would theoretically be less because we would have created the courtroom for this one judge.
Okay. Slide 13.
So, again, like I said, we have deferred maintenance requests. We know statewide there are deferred maintenance requests. But we, years ago, developed a priority list of all of our projects, and we come to the legislature annually asking for small amounts, or wouldn't say small, but asking for amounts of money for deferred maintenance projects. And so currently these are the top four priorities on our deferred maintenance list. You heard Chief Justice Carney talk about the metal map with Kodiak falling off in Anchorage. That's in our Snowden Administrative Building. So last year the legislature appropriated $1.5 million for deferred maintenance, which we were going to use for that project. That was ultimately vetoed, but we did receive that $1.5 million. So we're now back asking for essentially the second half of the Snowden facade. The 1.5 will do the front of the building, but we also need to replace the rest of the envelope of the building. The windows are leaking. There's water intrusion. There's wood damage from the water intrusion to that facility. Our second deferred maintenance request is for the Boney parking garage. This is also in Anchorage. This is a two-story parking deck where the second story has concrete falling off the roof onto the first story. I don't want to overly dramatize it, but it is unsafe. We are worried about the facility eventually reaching the end of its useful life. And if it ever got to that point, we would have increased operating costs for parking for about 100 parking spaces, which don't really exist in that part of Anchorage. And we also would have security concerns for not having secure parking for our judges in Anchorage.
Okay.
Our third deferred maintenance request is an elevator upgrade request. It's hard to really talk about something like this other than the parts of the elevators are becoming obsolete, so we can't replace them. So if we don't upgrade the elevators, we won't run the risk of not having elevators and running into ADA compliance issues.
Okay. Question from Rep. Stab for Mr. Klein.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair, Mr. Klein. The Boney parking garage, do the court system employees got to pay to park there through the chair?
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Stab, the court system employees do not pay to park at the Boney parking garage.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I think we're ready for slide 14 is the photo.
To the chair, this just shows there is no Kodiak on that metal map. That was what the Chief Justice referred to. And this is the exterior. This slide shows the exterior of the Snowden facility. Try not to compare it to other facilities statewide. I know Co-Chair Shragi visited us and saw the damage to this facility. But this is what the Chief Justice was referring to when talking about vermin intrusion, weather intrusion. This building was the Anchorage Times building way back when, so if that gives you a little understanding of the age of this facility, it's okay. Post-earthquake, but barely.
17, we'll go to There's the parking garage. Yep.
This is the damage to the parking garage. And again, I'll try not to belabor it. I know the committee will see many pictures of many statewide facilities that have concerns, but the concerns in this facility are real, and we do have actual operation, long-term operation concerns if we don't deal with this project.
Okay. Rep Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Sorry, I'm going to pick on this one again through the chair. This is in Anchorage, right, this parking garage, through the chair?
To the chair, yes, this is behind, it's confusing, it's actually right behind the Nesbitt Courthouse. We have a Boney and Nesbitt Courthouse, but this garage is called the Boney Parking Garage.
In default, Mr. Coacher.
Yes, follow-up, Rep Stapp.
And this parking garage specifically for the people who work at the courthouse, through the chair?
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. I don't know the exact parking breakdown, but I do know that our Anchorage judges park in this location, in this facility.
Last follow-up, Mr. Coacher.
Yes, last follow-up for Representative
Stapp. So I'm just curious if, so you know, most, pretty much everybody I know, when they go to work in Anchorage downtown, they got to pay to park there, and they use the fees of parking to kind of do your own deferred maintenance. So I'm curious if that's something the court system had ever thought of, making folks pay for their own parking like everybody else does in Anchorage, and then you wouldn't come have to ask us for money through the chair.
Mr. Klein.
The chair to Representative Stapp. I don't believe that the court system has considered that. I'm not aware of what the rest of the government agencies in Anchorage do, whether anyone else charges for parking, but we don't charge our employees for parking in this location or other parking locations.
Okay, thanks.
I think there are a lot of Superior Court judges and District Court judges that park there. It's secure, and they can enter the building without any security concerns. Is that part of what happens there?
To the chair, that's correct. This garage allows our judges to enter the facility through secure access. There's also a gate to get into this garage where we have other parking in Anchorage for other employees that aren't gate access. This is secure parking where a judge can enter the facility without running into
anything. Okay. Yes. Representative Moore for Mr. Klein.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Through the chair, thanks for being here. How many parking spots are in the garage?
Through the chair to Representative Moore, I know it's around 100, but I don't want to give an exact answer that I don't know. I'll have to get back to the committee with the exact number of parking spaces.
Okay, and follow-up?
Follow-up.
And how many judges do you have?
Through the chair to Representative Moore, statewide we have about 74 judges. In Anchorage we have three Supreme Court justices, four Court of Appeals judges, as well as, I believe, 20 Superior Court judges, and I don't know the answer for the total amount of District Court, but I think maybe, 17 Superior Court judges and 10 District Court judges.
Okay, so
follow-up.
So somewhere around 50 judges, maybe give or take a couple there, so there's 50 other parking spots that maybe could be charged for?
Through the chair to Representative Moore. Again, I don't know the exact number of spots in the lot, but I can get back to the committee.
Thank you.
We also have magistrate judges that park there as well.
Wonderful.
And I don't know the total of magistrates.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, slide 17.
This is the final capital project that we are requesting this year. This is for court security. And I don't want to get too high level, but I think it's really important to talk about just court security generally because this is a nationwide issue. The federal government has identified court security as a large issue for judges in federal service. We've seen upticks in court security issues. Thankfully, we haven't seen any catastrophic events, but nationwide there have been extremely concerning events both with judges and other government officials in the last couple of years. So I just wanted to say that because I know employees of the court system or the public might be watching, and it's important for them to know that this is something that's important to us. So we basically have a 5-year running list of projects we're trying to get through to finish our upgrades to have a modern security in our facilities statewide. And so last year we received $1 million for access control. This year we're asking for $750,000 for the rest of that project. And what that project really is moving to ensure that we have electronic key card access both into our facilities but also from the public to the private areas of our facilities and also to the courtrooms. And this will allow us to ensure that they're actually locked, moving from any hard key system, which generally people understand the the issues that you can have with a hard key system when a key gets lost or something like that occurs. We're also asking for $750,000 for video camera upgrades. Again, this is a statewide request where we have older cameras. They aren't digital in some locations. They aren't integrated with our access control in some locations. This would allow us to have modern security in all of our courthouses. The court security upgrades, it's a fairly vague descriptor. We're trying not to talk about where we might need to harden so publicly because we don't want to expose any vulnerabilities, but we have a couple locations where we think either a judge or a clerk could be more secure if we put in some ballistic shielding or some hardening material. And finally, in one of our courthouses, we want to put out a design to expand the judicial services area. Basically, the area is no longer sufficient for the capacity we need for the sally port for prisoners to be transported into the courthouse.
I think Representative Tomaszewski has a question for Mr. Klein.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, through the chair. So security is important. We obviously know that. How about with the jurors? All of us are subject to jury duty at some point. I've done it a few times myself. I like to be able to do that. In that parking garage, do you have parking for jurors? Where do they go, or where do they generally park when it have to come down there?
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski. So that parking garage is not used for jurors, but we have other parking in Anchorage. We have hundreds of employees in Anchorage, to be clear, amongst two courthouses and our administrative building. So we do have additional parking in Anchorage, or we pay for parking in Anchorage for jurors, but we do cover the cost of juror parking. Jurors are not on the hook for their parking costs.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to slide. Representative Allard.
And I know it's a lot with these parking spots. I get it. Thank you. And through the chair. But why would we pay for jurors that comes out of our taxpayer money, no matter what anybody says, we pay taxes, if there's spots in that parking garage that is not being accessed? I mean, you said there's approximately 100 slots, maybe roughly 50 judges. That's 50. Why aren't we? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Mr. Klein.
Through the chair to Representative Allard. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. I believe the parking garage is fully utilized. I just am not sure whether it's our employees or juror parking utilizing the additional spaces above the jurors. But that parking garage is utilized. We're not paying for juror parking on top of available space. We utilize our parking.
I'll think about things. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it.
I don't think I'm charged for my parking here.
But I didn't. And it wasn't that you weren't clear. I just don't agree.
Okay, slide 18.
This is our final slide before questions. This was intent language that was in last year's capital budget, encouraging the court system and the Department of Education to negotiate for the sale of the Stratton Library. And for a little background, in FY24, the legislature appropriated design money for a design of a new courthouse in Sitka. And then in FY25, the legislature appropriated money for us to purchase the Stratton Library. That FY25 appropriation was vetoed, and so last year the legislature encouraged this negotiation. And I know that Department of Education and we have both reported that we do have an agreement for the purchase. And the final piece of this intent language was that we should come back asking for a supplemental appropriation. So the court system did submit a supplemental appropriation request that is not in the governor's supplemental budget. So there is currently no budget item for this request. But we do have needs in Sitka for a new facility, and Stratton is what has been identified as serving that need. And so we are resuming that request. We would like to be able to purchase the Stratton Library in Sitka.
So I just want to be clear. It's not in the supplemental budget.
To the chair, correct. There is we submitted that request, but there is no item in the supplemental budget for $2 million for this sale.
Okay. Is FY27 sufficient? Assuming that the 60 of us found those sorts of resources, that's a big assumption. Is it meaningful that it's supplemental and not FY27?
To the chair, it is not meaningful to the court system what budget year the money came in. We're just staying consistent with the intent of the legislature. If you look at the second sentence italicized, that we request a supplemental appropriation in the amount of the purchase price, and so that is what we did.
Ah, okay. Final, any other questions for Mr. Klein? Okay, well, we thank you for your presentation and your good work.
Thank you, and we just hope that you'll consider our request. Thank you, Chair.
All right, we are going to take about 30-second at ease, gather ourselves, and resume. We're back on record in the Al Adams room on Monday, the 16th of February, and the time is 2:19. We'll now take up amendments, if we had any, to House Bill 289, Version G, followed by a motion to move the bill out of committee. I'm told that there are no amendments that are going to be offered to House Bill 289, the governor's supplemental budget, as modified by the committee's substitute. Before I ask for a motion, is there any discussion about version G as in good, House Bill 289? Okay. With that, Mr. Co-Chairman, I would entertain a motion on that version.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I move committee substitute for House Bill 289, Finance, Version 34-GH2638-G, Marks, dated February 12, 2026, be reported out of committee with individual recommendations, and that authorization be given to Legislative Finance Division and the Legislative Legal Services to make any necessary technical or conforming changes.
Object.
Object.
All right, so we have two objections. Rep. Stapp, as to version G, would you like to discuss your objection?
Yeah, I think, Co-Chair Justin, yeah, I mean, so, you know, the executive still has his amends to the supplemental budget that are supposed to come out on Wednesday. Obviously, if we move this bill and vote on it prior to that, there's probably a small probability that the things in the existing document would not align, but knowing that we do expect more things to come from the executive in FY26, it seems a little odd that we want to move this quickly on this bill. Also, I know we talk about this as a fast track, and I think there certainly are fast track items in the bill, but most of the bill certainly does not require us taking action this quickly, and I don't really want to see us kind of rush to failure on the overall 26 supplemental. I'll just do my one last concern. I think other people want to speak. So when it comes to like fund recapitalization, so I tend to think we should obviously replace the higher ed funds. It'd be very bad if the kids who are on scholarship didn't have scholarship funds. But just got to think from our perspective, as Republicans in the minority, like we didn't structure the budget to take the money out. And if we recapitalize the fund right now, what stops the other body from just stealing them, using the fund? They say, I mean, if we put the money back right now, they can just take it away again for something else in FY27's budget. So that would be something I wouldn't want to see happen either. So those are kind of my objections. Thanks.
I certainly hear you as to the latter or last comment. As to your first comments, I mean, there are House floor opportunities. We think most of the amendments will be to FY27. The other body could entertain them. We could concur in them. So there are other pathways for those. Any other comments about version G? Rep. Allard.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I believe the process is being rushed just a little too much. I don't think it's in any shape to leave this committee at this time. That's it. Thank you.
Our objection, Co-Chair Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I just wanted to say that I'm encouraged that this committee is deciding to move this bill now. I think there is some urgency behind it. Certainly, we could parse out various items in the bill on their varying levels of urgency, but I would remind members of this committee that the supplemental is for costs in fiscal year 26. These are costs that we are going to have to pay. I prefer to move fiscal year 26 forward as a package with those items that truly are fast-track indeed. We've heard very loud and clear from our contractor community and from the resource development community that funding certainty around these items is important. And frankly, I view it as a good step moving forward in order to be able to address fiscal year 27 and the challenges that we will face there. It's a good step to take care of the current year fiscal year obligations now so that we have a fresh slate moving forward into fiscal year 27. I know that we are expecting some amendments this week. I would remind members that within this supplemental bill, there is a small amount of headroom for additional items discovered through those additional supplemental amendments that we may get this week, which provides both bodies the ability to handle those with some flexibility while recognizing, again, that we need to be prudent and constrained in what we authorize from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. I think this package does that. Again, it addresses those current obligations that we will have to pay one way or another and does it expeditiously so that those fast-track items that are caught up in that pool of fiscal year 26 items are able to move forward quickly and, again, provide our resource development community and our contractors with the certainty that they've asked for around their funding for summer projects. So I'm going to be in strong support of moving this forward today so that we can get it to the other body and ultimately deliver to our contracting and resource development community the certainty they need for this year. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to make those remarks.
Okay. I don't see any other hands. The objections I better maintained. All right. So we have a motion. It's been objected to. The objection is maintained. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Jimmy?
Yes.
Representative Allard?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
No.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Bynum?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Shragi?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
6 yay, 5 nay.
All right. With a vote of 6 yay and 5 nay, Committee Substitute for House Bill 289 Finance, 34-GH2638/G, Marks, dated February 12th, is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and authorization for Legislative Finance Division and the Legislative Legal Services to make any necessary technical and or conforming changes. I think at this point we will ask you all to stay here to mark the bill with your recommendations and sign the paperwork, of course. That should, I believe, conclude our business. Am I right about that, Mr. Schroeder? That concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 17, 2026, at 1:30. At that meeting, we will hear departmental budget overviews from the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety. With that, and my thanks, we'll adjourn this meeting at 2:26, Monday the 16th. Thank you.